It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's going on? Welcome back to another BuzzBeat episode. This is Richie, and we are glad you guys are joining us today. We are back with the third and final episode of our Standout Skill series, where we look back on the season, look back on the strengths of some of the bigger name players here on the Hornets. We will take a look at Brandon Miller and Miles Bridges today, and then, if we have time, cycle through some of these names that were lower on the pecking order. Lastly, before we get in, we have a nice deal going on where you can get ad-free episodes and early access to episodes for just $8.75 a year. That's compared to $35 annually. That's 75% off. You have less than 10 days to redeem this, and we will put the link in the episode notes. But if you wanted the link, it's buzzbeat.substack.com/BB75. That's BB75. I'm going to be joined by Darian and Brian again. How's it going, guys?
Doing well. Darian, hope you're doing well as well. Gonna be a beautiful weekend here in North Carolina. I'm looking forward to that, and ready to, you know, sort of put a coda here on these player recaps for the season and turn the page for towards the what should be an interesting offseason for Charlotte. But no complaints on my end here.
Yeah, no complaints from me either. Just looking forward to the off season, specifically the draft lottery, which is also Mother's Day for those of you. Don't forget, because it's a big thing that you remember. But yeah, excited. Just go ahead, get this done, and look forward to the off season, because it is a big off season. Whether the Hornets will make the playoffs next year or not, this off season is going to be big for the future. So that's really what my eyes are set on.
Now, Darian, did you see the news today? I guess it's news, if you want to call it news, at the Wells Fargo Championship with Rick Schnall reporting that.
Yes, he said soon, I think is the word he used.
Soon.
Yeah, so.
Very definite.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
You know, I do suppose there's the chance that they've got something lined up and they're just sort of like waiting for different parts of the playoffs to play out. It does feel like this is something they've got a pretty good handle on. And so far, like, I think I thought they did a nice job middle of the season leading into the deadline, you know, and now they're obviously there's a new sort of like operation staff in-house to help also like see the vision through. But I think right now it's very early stages, but there should be, I think already there's like a little bit of like earned trust. I'll be curious to see who it ends up, you know, being the hire. We sort of joked about this a week ago that, maybe it was dragging out a little bit, but there's probably some reasons for that aren't disclosed yet.
Yeah. And I will say that this is how you kind of lead people on, but with confidence instead of incompetence. I know in the past they've kind of like kicked the can down the road, but he didn't give us a definite answer, but the way he kind of carried himself, he was very confident in it. So that is the difference between what we have now and what kind of management has been in the past. So it was good to hear, even though we didn't get an answer.
It
just felt completely different.
Yeah, you were sure that the soon actually meant soon, not like
right. Indefinitely.
Yeah. They're bringing James Borrego back, baby.
Yeah.
That was the plan all along, and no one was looking at him. So they're like, we got our guy.
Who are you guys rooting for in the playoffs? Like, what is the finals matchup that you guys would like to see? Because I'm leaning towards Knicks and Thunder or Knicks and Timberwolves.
I was going to say Knicks and Wolves. I think it's going to be a really gritty defensive game. And I think that would be good because the Wolves are making defense fun again, as far as entertainment wise. And the Knicks have been doing that.
Right.
to a lesser extent, and lesser names also. But yeah, that would be a really, really fun one for me.
I would be cool for almost any team coming out of the West. Seriously, like I find all of them to be pretty like fun and compelling. Loved watching Oklahoma City's performance against Dallas last night. I've been like kind of enthralled with Minnesota all season. And I mean, it is kind of amazing to see where they are, because I think really the nadir for them this year was when Charlotte beat them middle of the season, like right before some of those trades. Was that the last Rozier game or one of the last Hayward games? It was somewhere along the line there. That's where it seemed like everything was kind of coming unraveled, right, for them. But long season, they got it going again. And even once Cat went down, you know, Ant sort of jumped a level. So I found them to be like the most compelling team in the so far. What they're doing to Denver, the defense, how they've just, you know, ripped away like the Jokic Murray two man game, all Denver split action with Jokic initiating in the high post. So impressive. And then, Richie, I will say we did a pod back in like probably November after one of the Hornets' work games. And I remember we talked about, we were sort of, I would stop short of saying that we were gushing about New York, but we sort of talked about how much fun we had watching them and how it was sort of, we could see why, like, you know, Knicks fans were like, should be hyped about the team. At the time, you know, RJ Barrett was still there, you know. It was months before they made the move for Ananobi. So they're a different team now. And Brunson's obviously jumped levels since then too, but they play with a style that I think if you're a fan of the team, you can like really wrap your arms around, because they just sort of like embody a lot of things that, that like have to do with like the spirit of the game. So, but I think if I had to pick, I think I would go Boston, Minnesota.
Boston. Okay.
If I had to pick a match, because like, I think they're the best team in the East. And so because of that, I kind of want, it's like, ultimately I want the playoffs, like as much as like different narratives are interesting or cool, I do kind of want like to see the best play the best. And right now, I mean, it looks like Boston, Minnesota, but a lot can change, and I don't want to shortchange Oklahoma City, because they've looked pretty awesome so far as well.
Yeah, it's a good word, Darian, gritty. I feel like a lot of these teams that I mentioned, Thunder, Knicks, Timberwolves, they're all gritty teams. There's some physicality to them. And the Timberwolves are just getting, you know, contributions from everywhere. Naz Reid, Jaden McDaniels, Alexander Walker, OKC too. Like, you got the young guys in Cason Wallace and Aaron Wiggins. Like, when they come on the court, they're making contributions on both ends. And I do think like Luka's knee is probably hampering him a little bit in terms of like his aggression trying to get inside the paint. But still, I think OKC is throwing everything at him. Lu Dort is just like suffocating on him. So
it's done.
Connor McDavid, it's not real.
The goal of the year. Part of the past, the celebrations forgotten, the history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History. We're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It has also been cool seeing PJ like have some big moments. I mean, I think we've talked about PJ a lot on this pod, and I don't think I was alone in saying for years now he was a guy that looked like he could be on the floor of big games in the postseason. And I think when he's been off, you felt the lack of him, like if he's been in foul trouble or stuff like that. So it's been, I don't think he's been perfect, but I think he's had a nice postseason. And Dallas is interesting. I wish Luka's knee was 100%, because I agree, Richie, he doesn't look – He doesn't look right.
Yeah. Well, Kyrie's playing well, so that's good news for them. But let's go ahead and get on with our standout skill series here with Miles Bridges. Bridges averaged a career high 21 points and 7.3 rebounds, shot 53% on twos, 35% on three-point attempts. And he is always a tough one to discuss because of the off-the-court disputes, but we will kind of key in here on his basketball strengths today and focus on the court. He did miss those first 10 games due to suspension, but overall, like, he was like one of the most available Hornets on this roster, playing 69 of the 72 games. And one of those games that he missed wasn't due to injury. It was because of the Toronto fiasco with the pending charges, which kind of shocked everyone, coming out of nowhere there. He is an unrestricted free agent this offseason, so I think we'll have more conversation about him as the offseason picks up and whether or not the Hornets want to bring him back. Darian, in terms of Bridges, like, he's had an interesting career here. He showed some improvements with his on-the-ball playmaking several years ago. I feel like his athleticism has taken a step back. His role has definitely changed this year just because of all the injuries. We say that every year with the Hornets. Roles change because of injuries. But, like, taking into, you know, everything into consideration, what do you think of him as a player, and how do you think the Hornets should handle him in free agency?
For Miles Bridges, believe it or not, he was actually my favorite Hornet for a long time. So I really liked his game. I really liked how he every year you saw little changes in his game until he had that breakout. It was more like a half a season, like towards the end of the season, he started to really break out. Then he went on to kind of duplicate that for a full season. And every bit of his game was getting better. I like the toughness that he's able to bring offensively and defensively. I do think his off-ball awareness lacks a little bit, but that's not to take away from his own ball defense. I feel like sometimes when you say, you know, when you're upset at his off ball, people say, well, what about his own ball? It's like, yeah, but, you know, defense, you know, you have to play off ball defense as well. But I think he has all the tools to be this kind of glue guy for the Charlotte Hornets. Like, we're seeing, and these players aren't the same, but we're seeing like what a guy like Josh Hart is doing for the New York Knicks. Mm-hmm. I think Miles Bridges can somewhat be that for the Charlotte Hornets. Of course, completely different skill sets, but as far as like the role on the team, I think Miles Bridges can do that. I really like, I think his game has matured, but I will say it took a step back this year. I did see some things where he felt a little more confident in his mid-range shot. However, it didn't fall like he would want to, but he was taking it unlike years past. So, but that's the thing with injuries. You can't tell if he was settling or if he was, or he, is that really, you know, something he's developed in his game. So going forward, I think the Hornets should look to bring him back. Everything comes at a price, though, and it's just what are the plans for the team? If you are trying to be good right away, then, yeah, it might make sense to bring him back. And I'm for them bringing him back. But if you're trying to – you're still not quite sure direction of the team, you're still worried about LaMelo, maybe it's not best to give Miles a contract because you might not be able to reap the benefits of bringing him back. You bring him back 3 years, 4 years, it takes 2 years to get through a rebuild, then you only got 2 years left. Is it really worth it? I don't know. So I think they should bring him back, but I don't really know the inner workings of the team and how they're going to approach going forward.
He is a very difficult player to talk about. And I think we're on almost two full years now of me still being like pretty uncomfortable with it when this guy is the topic. I've made my stance clear on him many a times before. I wish he wasn't on the team. I don't think he should be in Charlotte. I think this season he was a losing player. I know the team was bad, but I thought his accountability and effort on the defensive side of the floor were pretty terrible. Skilled player, obviously, you know, he's a very talented offensive player, but took a lot of jumpers this season. You know, obviously the volume at the rim was way down, and I guess maybe the context, you know, wasn't great. Bad team, lots of injuries, but I just didn't think he played great this season. Had some big scoring games, but he's maxed out. Like, whatever he is as a playmaker, like as a secondary playmaker, I think he's maxed out in terms of that. Again, he can score in a bunch of different ways, and when he like is right, he can drive and pressure the rim and score and draw fouls, and you can use him in different ways. He can play both sides of the pick and roll. You can post him up. He's obviously talented in transition, but like to me, all of this has just always felt sort of like secondary to the, like, the actual, like, you know, to issue at hand. I kind of can't believe he played 69 games for them this season. Like, you know, every time I would, put on Hornets film and, you know, he's involved in a game and just being like, I can't believe this guy's back. Like, I kind of can't believe it, actually. He didn't play at all last season.
Right.
Like, it's nuts. And so I do think, like, I would like for the team to, like, get somewhat of a fresh start. And I think, like, finding a way to move off this guy, as difficult as that would be, like, Richie, you and I recorded a pod a few months ago, just sort of about all the financial mechanics and challenges that would come with a sign and trade with Bridges. There's really only, like, you know, a team or two that you could do it with, which would maybe be the Pistons. And there's a lot of teams that in their fan bases that are, like, you know, they're wary of having this guy come in, but understandably so. He's, again, the track record speaks for itself. Like, it doesn't seem like he's a very good person away from the basketball court, but he's in the prime of his career. He can score 20 points per game, and, like, he's a talent. So I'm sure he's going to be someone in demand this offseason, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was back in Charlotte.
Yeah. There's a comment here saying letting him walk for nothing is crazy, which, you know, there's a point to that. But, you know, the sign and trade option, which Brian is referring to, there is going to be a limited number of teams available because of the complications of the base year compensation and the new contract that he would sign. It would not be a 1-to-1 ratio with the incoming and outgoing salary. So if he does come back, you know, I think he does owe everything to the Hornets for sticking with him, not only, you know, in the previous years, but also giving him a new contract moving forward. And he's really got no room for error at this point. And he knows that. I think he knows that. But, you know, switching it back to his on the court play, and Darian, you mentioned this, Brian, you mentioned this in terms of the mid-range shot and how, whether or not it's settling, whether or not it's the context around it, whether or not it's him wanting to add that to his game. But part of me wonders if, not that it was a decision made by him, but maybe, in my opinion, the lack of burst in terms of getting to the rim prevented him from doing that. And so I do think there was a part of me that wondered if he did settle. Two seasons ago, he was averaging under one attempt from the mid-range. This year, he was taking like two attempts per game. And to your point, Darian, only shooting 35% on those attempts. And with the rim attempts, he was like in the 96th percentile in terms of how often he was getting there and attempting shots there. He was averaging over 8 points per game at the rim. This past season, 34% of his field goal attempts came within the restricted area, when that was actually closer to 40% two seasons ago. So, you know, there's a lot of context that comes into this with all the injuries, the changing roles. But, you know, kind of just judging based off the eye test, I do believe his lack of burst, his lack of athleticism showed up in this, you know, department, and it affected these numbers. And when I think of Bridges, I still think for the most part, he's a guy that is a rim creation guy. Like, I feel like that's still part of his game. And I think the hope for him is that he comes back next season and somehow regains that athleticism. I'm not sure if he will ever get to the same type of athleticism that we saw, like highlight dunks after highlight dunk. So for me, my standout skill for him is kind of more of like potential than it is kind of what we saw this past season. And it's the creation upside, whether that's for himself, whether that's for others. I do think he regressed in this department this season. But because of the situation, I just kind of have to adjust the way that I look at things. He has shown the ability to create shots at the rim. He has shown ability to get others involved, and he's going to get high value attempts as well in terms of whether that's passes at the rim or passes from behind the arc. So that's kind of where I land with Miles Bridges. I struggled with this one because there's a lot of areas this season where he regressed a lot. And maybe that was to be expected because he had a year off, and maybe that was to be expected because of the fact that he had to play a bigger role this year on both ends of the court. So, you know, hats off to him for being available. But in terms of like the on the court stuff, My skill is more based off of like what he did two seasons ago or three seasons ago, and then more about like potential as well. So I'm going to say creation upside for him.
He had one of the perfect Bridges game this season, really the perfect game that I think distilled like where he was at, was the game in early February where he scored 41 points. Yeah, I guess he had back-to-back games with 40 plus points. Again, he is a talent. But the game against the Lakers, 41 points in 40 minutes and got zero rebounds, which is just I don't think he was a winning player this year. And that goes sort of beyond the fact that the team wasn't very good. That said, like, I guess to sort of just like piggyback off what Richie was saying is just that like he can be a pressure point, you know, his ability to drive, with his ability to post up, you know, the Hornets used him a lot this season, same with Hayward before the deal. And they used Grant Williams in this role, but just, you know, they would slice him down to the post or, you know, cross screen him to the mid post and then, let him try to score from there, or they'd run some, you know, off ball screening action to get Miller a three or Rozier a three, or NSJ a look, you know, coming back to the ball. He did okay with that stuff this year. I don't think it was like super duper advanced, you know, mid post playmaking and passing. So I wouldn't highlight that as like the strength, but yeah, I just think it's the fact that like, even if he wasn't quite the same athlete, he still is, you know, he's still a very good athlete. He's strong. And because of that, he can force, he can put teams in rotation or force, you know, extra defensive help. And he is like fine enough of a passer to sort of like capitalize on a shifting defense. So I would just say his ability to be a pressure point.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
So mine, surprisingly, is his rebounding, but I will say that it's Miles Bridges is a player where he turns it on and turns it off. And I feel like that can really be said for anybody. I don't think that's particularly to him. What I do like about his rebounding is that a lot of times, as I think I mentioned in last podcast, where Nick Richards has 3 rebounds and then you look, Miles Bridges has 12. He had 20 games where he had over 10 rebounds this year. And I think there's different ways you can look at it. You can look at it as the stats, and of course the stat look good. But if you kind of watch the game, you do realize that we have other guys who kind of maybe just stare at the ball. If, you know, it just watch it go by. He's a good, he goes for the ball when it's a long rebound. He does kind of sit in the paint and try to get boards that way. And I'm not saying he's like, didn't disrupt him in the rebounding, but in a team like this, where if your centers aren't rebounding and it's not LaMelo, we're not getting rebounds. And then how often do you want LaMelo, kind of especially back-to-back seasons, how often would you really want LaMelo down there trying to get boards? Not too often. So this is where guys like Miles Bridges comes into play, because Grant Williams, we also know, is not that, I wouldn't say talented of a rebounder, but he's not really in position to get the rebounds. He's more of a box-out guy, let somebody else come get the rebound. So we had to rely on someone like Miles Bridges to do that. And with him being able to rebound, that allows us to kind of go up the court, and you never know what he can do. If Miles Bridges does, we can just assume that he may go back to how he was previously, only because I feel comfortable projecting that, because it wasn't like it was an injury. He just didn't play. I feel like if you get Miles Bridges from before, there's no telling what he can do once he grabs the ball off the rim. He can run the floor. He can find an open person. He can take it to the rim himself if he has his explosiveness. But that's why I really like his rebounding, because it's something that lacks on his team, even from our bigs. And I think he does a pretty good job of it. However, it's one of those things where it's obvious that it's effort with him. Mm-hmm. I know we're talking about the highlight skill,
right?
So, but the low light skill, in saying my highlight skill, is that you can 100% tell it's effort. That's why he does, as much as he's had games where he had 15 rebounds, he does have those games where he only has zero, or he has zero, or he only has one. So that's going to be the thing with him. Winning fixes that, but I'm not one of those people who like to say, who like to ignore it and say, when we win, it'll fix itself, because it doesn't always end up that way. But that's just kind of my hope for him. If he can continue being a good rebounder, hopefully our bigs rebound a lot better too, because that will kind of help him out and help out the team. But we'll see going forward. I think he's dangerous. He could be dangerous, getting the rebounds, going up the floor in a fast break, if this team continues to want to run. I mean, I think the coaching is going to have a part in that as well. If we're not running anymore, it kind of takes away from that.
Yeah. All right, let's transition over to Brandon Miller. Miller averaged 17.3 points, 4.3 rebounds, 2.4 assists in his rookie season, shot 50% on twos and 37% on threes. And he finished third recently in the Rookie of the Year voting, which we probably expected to happen. I think that's probably where he belonged. I don't know if you can really make the case about Holmgren, because he was very impactful on both ends of the court on a winning team. Very good pick and roll big, very good rim protector. Like, he did so much to help that Thunder team win games. And, I do kind of push back on the thought, though. Like, I don't know what you guys feel about this. Like, he's technically a second year player, but I've heard some people, say something to the effect of, well, there's no benefit in him sitting out because of injury in his first season. And, that has no real bearing on his performance this year. But I don't really know if I buy into that notion.
There's extreme benefit to being, right, being around pros. You're not working. You may not be working out with them, but you're seeing them work out. You're seeing how they conduct themselves. You're into meetings. That's the biggest thing about at any level of sports. When you're injured, you are sitting there with the coaches game planning. Or, I mean, obviously he wasn't the one writing up plays, but you're in those meetings because they're like, if you can't play, we're going to have you around for the cerebral stuff. So being able to take that in, having the diet, the training, the relationships, I think all that plays into being a better pro. And that's a part of the game that people don't see. So I feel like that's why it's so easy to say, oh, well, if they don't play, they could still be seen as a rookie. Then it's like, would you want to call Joel Embiid a rookie when he missed the first 2 years? I mean, I think they end up doing that, but it's just like the knowledge he's gained in that meantime is, no rookie is going to come in. That's not the same playing field.
Yeah, I'm like mostly unbothered by it. I know this became a thing a couple of years ago with like the Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell Rookie of the Year debate or whatever. It's like crazy to see how different those dudes' careers have gone subsequently. I mean, Simmons has played, he's played how many basketball games total the last couple of seasons? And, Don's out here closing out teams in the playoffs. Pretty amazing.
Ben Simmons was at Met Gala while Donovan Mitchell hit like 50 points in a playoff game.
I saw that, man. It's just what a strange career. Very strange career for Simmons. Obviously, but no, I mean, I get it. I don't mind, Holmgren, guys like that basically had a redshirt year being considered for it. Like, and I think there are benefits because you're just around the team. You get to know what it's like to be a professional. Even if you can't play, you're still probably like on a somewhat of a, you're on somewhat of a like development system in terms of like strength training and that type of stuff. And that matters a lot. Like, that matters a ton. So there's of course going to be some benefits from it. If you can at least like return at full health, probably going to be some stuff that you picked up along the way that's going to be good for you. But I don't think it's like, like unfair for those guys to be, lumped into these considerations. I think it's justified that Wembanyama ran away with it. He was amazing this season. And I think Miller fell into a great spot. I think the thing that is like the thing that strikes me the most is that I feel like for most of the season, everyone on the pod here was sort of saying like, yeah, he's definitely like the third or fourth best rookie in the league, right? Like, and there was a time where like Hawkes was playing so well at the start of the year. Lively was playing well. Asar Thompson, was off to like a good start. And, you know, the Hornets were so bad. It was just, it was so funny to see how, like, there were, like, smart basketball writers. Like, Kevin Pelton, Bobby Marks doing, like, rookie rankings. That would have, like, Miller as, like, fifth. The eighth best rookie in the middle of the season. It was like, what is going on?
And so, it's like, we can't be watching the same
Yeah. So it's just, like, good. It's, like, good to know that, like, it, you know, all's well that ends well. He ended up in the slot that he should have been. And I mean, huge congratulations for him, because, like, as I'm sure has been pointed out plenty of times, like, this was not a normal rookie class, right? Not even because of, like, Chet's inclusion in it, but just having, like, potentially an all-time player like Wembanyama, and to still end up third, and not because there weren't, like, other very good rookies around him too. Like, again, this was, like, a very strong class. So it's a huge testament to Miller. He was amazing this season. He really was.
Yeah, I think the stiff competition in the rookie race to a certain extent overshadowed his performance, but not to the point where he's fifth or sixth or seventh on a rookie ranking. So he did end up in the correct spot. And I think in terms of intangibles, like, this very well could be his standout skill, is the fact that he didn't really play like a rookie. Like, he was so calm on the court. Clifford mentioned that multiple times. Clifford even mentioned that he was a guy that was able to take what was taught in practice one or two times and was able to quickly transition that over to his game on the court. So this idea that he can be, you know, taught something quickly, turn it around, is awesome. The idea that he can be sped up, like, that just didn't exist either. Like, it's just so rare for a rookie. So all these intangibles that he has, you know, on and off the court, and how that translate over to his rookie season was pretty cool to see. In terms of the stuff that's more like on the court, I think obviously he's got to get stronger. I think him getting stronger in the process will help a lot of his deficiencies. But, you know, I think for the most part, there was a lot of things to like, especially about his offensive game. His ability to score off handoffs, which, you know, he's really good at turning the corner, reading the defense. He was really good off cuts as well. But, you know, I'm going to go ahead and give my standout skill for Brandon. I'm sure you guys were probably going to talk about this at one point, but, you know, it's just the poise that he has in the mid-range. He shot 47.4% on non-paint mid-range attempts, and that was 190 attempts in that specific zone. There are about 40 players in the NBA that shot over 170 from this area, and he ranked 12th in all of the NBA in efficiency from non-paint mid-range attempts. So very smooth in terms of if he's run off the line, if he's running pick and roll, he can keep the guy on his back. And it kind of plays off, you know, his other parts of his game, because he's still a really good three-point shooter, and he can turn that into a ability where, okay, They double him, which you saw that a lot. He can get us come off a screen, come into the mid range. I think he was passable in the floater range as well. So that to me is kind of where I first start with him. It's just the poise that he has, especially in the mid range area.
Yeah. I was so impressed with how he showed up to, like, get rolling in the preseason, because I thought summer league was, like, a little tough for him. Had some good moments in Sacramento and Vegas. But I really thought it was like when preseason started and all of a sudden it was like, whoa, he belongs. And he's playing with veterans, and, like, you could see that, like, you know, Hayward liked playing with him, Rozier liked playing with him. That stuff, I think, matters. And early on, you know, he's really playing this sort of, like, off-ball role, spot up, cutter. It felt like he was getting a lot, like, a dunk every other game, just being in the weak side corner and cutting baseline. If Charlotte was running, like, wing pick and roll or something like that, LaMelo would find him, Hayward would find him. He's making the extra pass. He's closing out on guys, just, like, checking all the, like, boxes, where it was just immediately, it was like, oh, this guy's playable already. Like, you can just trust him to guard some different positions. You can trust him to be in the right spots generally on defense. And with his shooting and in the movement, like, he's already viable, as you know, secondary offensive player. And then he kind of got pressed into needing to be on the ball more this season. And maybe there was, like, a bit of a mini slump, but, like, he was pretty steady throughout the year. Certainly the limitations popped up, like the lack of strength, the lack of, like, burst, you know, like, plus, like, type burst. The guy that, you know, he isn't someone that just, like, instantly is going to just like turn the corner and get to the rim every single time. These were like sort of like some of, in my opinion, some of the concerns with him as like a, as a prospect, but
he was like, he drew a lot of and ones. Am I misremembering that? I don't know. I could be wrong. I can look it up, but
and I would say too that like his athleticism is interesting because he is a good athlete. Like you see it with the chase down blocks. He had some of the like nastiest dunks I've seen a Hornet have in the last couple of years, and like not just on the break, but some stuff in the half court. You know, he'd come off a ball screen if the coverage wasn't right. He had a crease to get to the rim. Man, he could do some pretty impressive, stuff, finishing, but he still like needed like a runway to work with, you know, when stuff would sort of like, bog down and kind of like get the grimiest for him. It's when he was dealing with, you know, some pressure and some strength and some physicality in his face. And that seemed to usually produce like just either like the pass out to someone else or him kind of throwing up these sort of clunky, you know, half runners from 10 to 15 feet or 10 to 17 feet or 8 to 15 feet, like whatever the distance is. But like when he was able to just like set his feet and get to that pull up, I mean, it was super reliable already. That mid-range scoring is like, that is the province of all-star players, you know, like they're the ones who get to take those shots. And so the fact that like, I know the team was bad and they needed someone to eat up those reps, but the fact that he could do it and do it well, really interesting. I think he's like a pretty consistent shooter and scorer, but like he also has some games like the Orlando game late in the year where he just got he gets red hot, and like it's really fun because then all of a sudden, because he's such a malleable offensive player, you can put him in, you're such a good handoff player coming off screens, just like the movement skills, all of a sudden the playbook opens up and you're just like, well, you're just thumbing through it. You know, what do we want to call for this guy next time down the court? Like it would be a very fun guy, I bet, to like scheme stuff up for, especially once he's got it, when he has it rolling like that. And then I thought down the stretch, you know, once Misic and Mann were in town, those guys are sort of like taking on more of the ball handling roles. It sort of allowed Miller to still be on the ball a lot, but kind of settle back more a little bit to some more spot up looks, you know, more movement motion type stuff. And I thought that blend was really, really good for him. For me, like I thought his strength, honestly, like my favorite parts for him, because he did so much stuff well offensively this season, and he's got like, you know, we'll see if he can become stronger. We'll see if he can become a more manipulative passer. I think right now he's like a pretty solid, you know, station to station guy, and you know, he can pick out guys on the dive and that type of stuff, pick out cutters. But for me, I think my favorite part of watching him this season, the skill that stood out the most was I really liked when the Hornets would get him in the action and then it would flow into a screen or flow into a handoff that then would allow Miller to not just catch and shoot, but sort of like catch, read the floor. Like he can catch and shoot and go quickly, but it was kind of nice when like he would basically, they drum up some small amount of advantage for him, run him into a screen, run him into a handoff, then give him the ball, and let him make a play. And I thought he was like pretty good. I just thought it was a nice way to like blend his skills, both as like, you know, a 6'9" movement shooter, or a, you know, 6'8" 6'9", you know, pick and roll, you know, like tall jumbo, you know, pick and roll operator. And his ability to sort of like toggle both. It's just fun when you can find ways to like kind of blend both of those things at the same time. Man, he was just incredible. I had a lot of fun watching him play this season. He was certainly like the highlight of covering this team. It's like not even close, in my opinion. And I'm excited to see what year two looks like for him. And we've talked about this before on the pod. Someone in the comments mentioned it too, just like his leadership, you know, that being like a strength of his. Like, it's going to be interesting to see. Like, I'm very excited to watch he and LaMelo play together. And I don't think we're anywhere close to it having to be like, whose team is it? Like, they're bad. The team is bad. You know, like, the team belongs to losing at the moment. But, like, so I just think there's a chance for those guys to, like, to sort of, like, grab it together and share it. But I like having a guy like Miller who is uber competitive and focused. I think that's a good, and he's young too. I think that's a good guy to have like next to LaMelo, not just from like a talent standpoint, which is obvious, but just like there's a mentality component too that I think could maybe hopefully get LaMelo to a different level. I hope LaMelo is also home seeing what Anthony Edwards is doing. And I mean, it's maybe not a fair comparison because Edwards is just physically so, so special, but just like, you know, there was a time where like LaMelo was considered, you know, higher up, you know, in term. And I think Edwards probably had a higher ceiling just because of his athletic traits and stuff like that. But I would just seeing a guy like Ant who's morphing into like a top 10, 12, 15 guy in the league. Like, I don't know. I'd be curious to know like how LaMelo is processing this and what that means for him in terms of the offseason. So but we're talking about Brandon Miller. So yeah, highlight skill, I would say it was the movement aspects that flowed into him getting to like, you know, work on ball.
Gotcha. Let me just share this real quick, Darian, before you get your standout skill. And I've got to run here soon. So we will wrap up here with Brandon Miller and Darian's thoughts. But I looked up the and ones for the Hornets, and the leader was Miles Bridges, also on this episode, and Brandon Miller was behind him at 26 and one. So not a crazy amount, but there's probably a couple stretches where it felt like he was just getting and ones almost every game.
Yeah. And he progressed so well, you know, throughout the season that I definitely believe that. But my standout skill is we kind of talked about it a little bit, so I really won't add too much, but I started off with leadership, but as I continued to write out my bullet points, I really turned it into maturity. And I say that because of the fact that the first thing I noticed was like the second game we had against the Pistons, where Isaiah Stewart was being Isaiah Stewart, and he tried to get under Brandon Miller's skin and Brandon Miller just didn't budge. Those are things that I felt like this team needed. And the reason I wanted to highlight his maturity, because that's something I personally was wrong about when I was scouting Brandon Miller last year, was his maturity. I know people like to use like the case that he had that ended up being dropped, but that really wasn't it. It was just more so he was a very just laid back kind of guy. And with the way the Hornets were at the time we drafted him, I was just like, we just don't need another person like that. It had nothing really to do with Brandon Miller, because we see that archetype works for a lot of teams and a lot of different scenarios, but I felt like we had too many of those guys. But Brandon Miller, that's who he is as a person, but when he gets on the court, he's a completely different person. And I think that we saw it translate to some of the younger guys, like, even though, you know, he came in with him, but like NSJ, like Bryce McGowan's, it also the older guys loved it, like PJ Terry. I know they mentioned it like while they were here in Charlotte. So just Brandon Miller being able to do that at such a young age, at when everybody thought he was just this immature kind of kid. And then you go into the summer league, and he said, not Brandon Miller, but Paul George was his GOAT. And then he didn't know who Chris Middleton was in some social media thing they did. Like, everybody was just like, oh, he's just a goofball. And he is. Like, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when it comes to basketball, when it comes to getting better, when it comes to getting the result, that's what he cares about. You could see it visibly and on his face during the games. I mean, he multiple times he was yelling at veteran players to get back on defense. Multiple times he was basically begging for the ball, because like Brian said, he would be hot and like, give me the ball. It would show the commercial in the slow-mo. You could literally read Brandon Miller's lips saying, give me the ball. He did that on multiple occasions. Didn't matter who was guarding him. And I just think that's something we needed. I know there was a big debacle in the middle of the season about who's the leader, LaMelo or Brandon Miller. To me, it doesn't really matter, but it always helps to have a guy who is just not afraid to speak his mind, but also can be buddy-buddy with you. It doesn't matter if he's the number one leader, the number five leader, but it, no matter where he's at, it always helps to have that guy like that. And as much as he's done well on the court, as far as just his basketball skill, which I think everything you could say about Brandon Miller coming in, I think he showed you that and more with the shooting. People judge the mid-range. He came in and he showed that he was able to do that. But I think just the intangible things of just about his personality and maturity is really what I like most about him, because it's just night and day compared to what it was kind of rumored to be coming into the season. And we desperately needed it. We still do.
Yeah, very good. Well, because of time, we will hold off on some of the minor players that we were going to do on this episode. But if you really want some NSJ talk or Bryce McGowan's talk, just go pester Brian or Darian on Twitter and let them know what you think about their highlight skills of the season. So we wanted to thank everyone that joined live on the video version and also the people that are listening on the audio version as well. We hope you guys like this series. We've officially tied a bow on the 23-24 season, and we can now switch gears to the offseason and draft coverage, Brian's favorite part of the year. So the lottery is Sunday, and we will have some kind of coverage and some kind of capacity of that. So stay tuned. For Darian and BG, I'm Richie. Take care, and we will talk to you guys next time.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.